Welcome to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. If you believe that passing down faith is essential for the next generation, you are in the right place. Enjoy conversations with guests who are faith practitioners, parents, caregivers, pastors, counselors, and many more. You'll enjoy practical tools and community for passing down faith to your children and grandchildren. Thank you for joining us today. We're glad to have you with us. I am Leon Blanchette, and I am with our co-host, Lindsay.
Hey, everybody. Great to be with you again.
It's good to see you, Lindsay. Glad you're here.
Same to you.
I wouldn't want to do this by myself.
Agreed. It's so much fun having a friend to talk to.
It is. It's fun to do it together.
Like we've heard that somewhere.
Like faith together. Wow, what a concept. So we're starting a new series today.
Yes, we are. I'm so excited about this series that begins today. You guys know that we have been talking about why we're having this Faith Together podcast. So those episodes were our first two episodes, the why behind Faith Together, and then what Scripture says about passing on faith.
Right, so that was a really important one. So If you've missed that, we really encourage you to go back and review those, right?
Yes, please, please do. But we're so glad you're with us today because we're starting a brand new series today called What is a Healthy Parent? Because we know that when it comes to faith and passing down our faith to our kids, to our grandkids, we can't give what we don't have. We need to take care of our own health as we're loving kids in our lives. And that health looks like our mental health, our emotional health, our physical health, and our spiritual health. All those things matter. And if we want to provide an irresistible environment for our kids to know Jesus, we need to have an irresistible relationship with him. And we need to take care of our own souls and our own mental health. And so today, we are so thrilled to have with us two guests to share with us of what it means to take care of your mental health as a parent and as a caregiver of kids around you.
Yeah, and this series is unique because we're going to have guests for many of our episodes for this series, correct?
Yeah, every episode we have a guest.
Yeah, so we're very happy to have Brianna Cook and Lisa Vandeveer with us. Ladies, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so Brianna, tell us a little bit about yourself so we can get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Brianna Cook. I am the Director of Counseling here at Olivet. I have been here for 9 years, and then previous to that, I did my internship here at the Counseling Center while I was completing my master's program in professional counseling also here at Olivet. I am a licensed clinical professional counselor. I am currently overseeing a team of, I think we figured out eight people on the team right now. Before that, I was the training director, and I've also had time here as a staff therapist. I have 5 kids, my husband and I. We have 5 children. They range in age from almost 16 all the way down to 8. So we have, I like to call it a joyful chaos. We are very busy. My kids are very involved in sports. That's kind of our life right now. So the focus is always on, you know, trying to balance family time and sport time and making sure every kid gets the equal attention and spotlight. So that's a little bit about family life. We attend River Valley Christian Fellowship, which is a church in the area here. We have been members there for several years, and we're fairly involved there, very happy with our involvement in the community. I'm on the school board. I am active in a few sports boards as well. So again, joyful chaos.
Sounds like you're busy. Yeah. That's good. Good. Thank you for coming and joining with us today. And Lisa, we've known each other for a while now, haven't we?
Yes, I've been at Olivet for a while now.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about Lisa.
Well, I'm Lisa Vandeveer. My current role is as the Dean of Student Persistence here at Olivet. I am also a licensed clinical psychologist. My previous role at Olivet was overseeing counseling and health services. In addition, I've spent the past 10 years doing a private practice in counseling where I've worked with children and families. So I've learned a lot about children and families through that. Also, working with college students and doing counseling, I feel like it's beginning with the end in mind. I've gotten to hear a lot of what college students say about their upbringing and how that's impacted their development and their faith. So I feel like that's been almost like an interesting study as well. and I have 4 children of my own, and they keep me busy, maybe not quite as busy as Brianna with her 5, so but I spend a lot of time in hockey rinks and at gymnastics facilities right now. I also attend Calvary Church in Orland Park, and I've been there since I was 3 years old.
Wow, good. Well, we're thankful you're with us, and our topic today is parental mental health. As we had a conversation about this, we began to realize that, and the reason for this series is the realization that if we're going to pass our faith to our children, then we have to be healthy people. The research, there's lots of research about that, which we're not going to go into all that on the podcast, but I would like to kind of begin our conversation by talking about how important is it for parents' mental health when it comes to the health of their family? So I'll just let you guys kind of jump in as you'd like on these questions.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's obviously very important, but it's not something that we really should beat ourselves up about as parents if we are struggling. We actually don't have much control over when we struggle or if we struggle or when bad circumstances happen to us. And so it's more about our response to those circumstances. I do believe it's important for us as parents to get help, to be honest about needing help. And so really our mental health can be an opportunity for us to teach our children how we manage our emotions, how they can manage their emotions, and we can demonstrate strength and how to move forward even when we're struggling. I think it helps them build resilience as we model that for our children.
Yeah, that's good. So let me, as I'm listening to you talk, Lisa, I'm thinking it's possible that someone's listening and doesn't really know when we say mental health, what are we talking about? So can you just give us kind of a quick little summary maybe of what we mean when we say mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in a general sense, it's our sense of well-being and how we cope with difficulties, our mental flexibility as a general term. And then there's also the other end of it where it's mental illness, where we're in a spot where we struggle to the point where it impairs our functioning at work, with our families, or in other aspects of our life, just our physical health as well. So that's how I would define like the mental health, mental illness.
Okay, good. Great. I think that's helpful.
Awesome. You know, there are so many listeners tuning in today that Lisa and Brianna that may struggle as a parent with a mental illness. What does that mean for their family and the impact that that might have on them if they are struggling with a mental illness?
Yeah. So of course, mental health challenges can and do impact the family. We can't get away from that. There's no getting around it. It's just part of the reality of mental health and the challenges that we face in that. But as parents, we can be proactive in trying to make the impact on the family a positive one. So that's the goal there, is we want to make sure that we're avoiding the negative impact. So if we're taking care of our mental health and we're modeling this in a way that our children get to witness it, then it doesn't have to have a negative impact. Of course, we want to be mindful that we're not oversharing, right? So we want to share, we want to give them a glimpse without oversharing, but we also want to make sure that we're not burdening our children. They shouldn't be the ones taking care of us. We want them to see a healthy balance. We want them to see that we are taking action, that we are engaging in treatment, that we're engaging in self-care. And once they see that, they can feel confident that we're taking care of ourselves, and they can also learn to do that for themselves then.
Yeah, that's really good. So that leads in kind of to the next question. So what should I do when I'm observing that my child is struggling with mental health issues? I guess there could be a variety of things that they're struggling with, but probably anxiety, depression, I imagine is pretty high on the list these days. So if I'm noticing that in my child, what should I do as a parent?
Yeah, so this is so scary for parents, right? It's something that we worry about often. One thing we can do is just to demonstrate healthy ways to talk about mental health. So if our kids can see us having conversations either with our spouse or with another adult, and they can see the way that conversation is going and how we're responding to one another, then they can start to feel comfortable in having those conversations themselves. So we want to normalize that mental health challenges do happen, and also that it's okay to talk about them with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I have 3 sons in addition to a daughter, and sometimes the boys won't open up as much. And mm-hmm. So I've learned to not push them as much. You know, that's been frustrating for me, even as a psychologist. Like, my clients will come in and just pour their hearts out, and my 11-year-old will just like shake his head no and won't tell me what was going on in his day. So really, I've learned clinically and as a parent, not to push them. I think it helps to create some space for it, especially with boys. I've noticed creating even opportunities where you are parallel, so you're not facing one another, and you're side by side, whether you're going for a walk or for a drive. They tend to open up a little bit more with that. I think that if our kids don't want to talk to us about what they're struggling with, that's okay. Maybe it could be that it's easier for them to talk to someone else. Maybe we are playing a role in the problem. So that's not to say that we are the problem. An example of that would be, I learned that my son would not tell me as much because he'd see me come home from work and I seemed stressed and tired and he didn't want to make me feel worse. And of course, as a parent, I feel worse with him not telling me. So sometimes there are dynamics that come into play where they won't talk to us as much. But I think there's other times where we may seem busy or maybe we're stressed or maybe we're overly perfectionistic and our kids might struggle in that way to talk to us. So really, if you're lucky enough to have your child come to you and talk about their concerns, listening to them, validating them, I think that when they might come to us and say, okay, I'm identifying you playing this role, our first instinct might be to defend ourselves or explain. And really listening and validating is the best thing that we can do to just validate their experience.
I love that. That's so practical in specifically as you were sharing, Lisa, about your sons and in doing the parallel activities and just providing space, right, for them to express whatever is going on. Because we know that sometimes kids don't even have the language to express that until they're given space to do so. So I love that, you know, you mentioned just focusing on ways that they can be listened to and validated and given that.
That's good.
Sometimes even through play. So if you're playing a card game with them or you're just playing with toys or playing outside, sometimes they'll open up more that way as well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it helps for them to just talk to someone professionally, even if it's not us.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good for them to see that modeled, that it's okay to talk to other people that can help you. Yeah. It gives them that permission. Now, we know when we think about faith that the Bible repeatedly tells us, do not be anxious, right? I think I heard growing up that do not fear is written 365 times in the Bible.
And so, is that true?
I don't know, but I was told that as a young girl. And, you know, so every day they would say, Lindsay, you have a reason not to fear today because the Bible says so. You know, do not be anxious, that Philippians passage. So how do we reconcile what the Bible says about faith, hope, and trust with a child's depression or anxiety?
This is something we hear so frequently with our clients. They come to us and they're expressing all of these concerns because that's what they've heard growing up too. So I'm not supposed to be anxious. Something's wrong with me because I'm not supposed to be anxious. And yes, our Bible does tell us that. But this isn't easy. And our Bibles don't tell us that avoiding anxiety is easy. So that's a helpful reminder for kids to hear, for everyone to hear. It can be really, really difficult just to manage anxiety. So if our faith is important to us, we want to incorporate the relationship that we have with Jesus into our treatment and allow that to be part of treatment. So we can involve speaking with our pastor. We can involve reading the Bible. We can involve prayer. That can all be part of treatment, but we can do that alongside mental health treatment as well.
Mm. I think that's a good clarification. Sometimes as someone who is enjoys biblical exegesis and hermeneutics, it's a bit frustrating at times when people take one verse and pull it out without looking at it in the context in which it's intended. So I won't go any further with that because I could go all day on that. But yeah, sometimes I think we avoid seeking the help that we need because of the way that we have understand particular scriptures being used inappropriately in our lives. So thank you, Brianna, for sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. That's really important. So, all right. I'm kind of sitting here thinking about, you know, if I'm listening to this conversation and I'm trying to process through all that you all are sharing with us, I'm wondering, how do I go about promoting mental wellness in my family? How do I help my kids in particular to be healthy? You know, our kids are involved, as yours are, Brianna, in sports, and so we physical health is there, and we work hard at that, and we, for the most part, try to keep an eye on our kids' diets, you know, and things like that. And we get them to the doctor to make sure that they're staying healthy and they get their vaccines and everything else that's a part of childhood. We send our kids to church hoping they're going to get some spiritual stuff, and we do lots of things. But how do we assure, maybe this is not something we think a lot about, but how do we assure that our children are healthy emotionally and in the world of mental health?
I think there are a lot of ways to promote mental health within our household. And some of them may seem kind of simple, but the first one that comes to mind is when I think about our society and how much perfectionism we see. And I think people have always had high standards in perfectionism. You know, historically people have struggled with that, but now it's so public and it's so easy to appear perfect that it is even more of a struggle. So modeling grace to our children when they make mistakes, but also to ourselves when we make mistakes, can be really powerful for them to see that I'm not perfect. You know, I made this mistake and I'm owning it, and modeling self-acceptance when we describe maybe how we screwed up in some way. Even if we are a little bit harsh or short with our children, going back to them and apologizing. I can't tell you how many clients I've talked to over the years where they said, my parents have never said sorry to me when they did something, and they've hurt my feelings lots of times. And so I think modeling just that we are human and modeling that it's okay to make mistakes will help a lot. And even pointing out in the Bible, I mean, there were plenty of imperfect people in the Bible. It's not that, you know, the Lord needed people to be, you know, absolutely perfect for him to use them for his purposes. And so pointing out imperfection can actually be pretty healthy.
Yeah, Lisa, I like that. It reminded me in my own parenting, I think some of the most successful times that I have parented is when I have blown it, especially at my kids, and then had enough sense in that moment to go back and say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. Will you forgive your dad for what you did? And I think what that does, man, first of all, it's refreshing for me. It's good for my soul to be able to do that. But second, I think it's great for our kids. I grew up in a family where, and this is a generational thing in my family, where parents never said they were sorry because they're the parent, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's something refreshing and encouraging for our kids, for a parent who they see blow it, to actually admit it and to be able to say sorry. So Lisa, that was really great. Mm-hmm. Brianna, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I have a couple more ideas. One thing, I've mentioned this a few times, but we want to have conversations about mental health in our normal everyday lives with our families. So even if it's not necessarily applying to our family specifically, we still want to talk about it, right? So we want to normalize conversations around mental health and mental health challenges. We want to encourage our kids to learn about it, so that they can support other people, so they can be there for their friends, and also so they understand it if it starts to happen to them. So just having everyday conversation, also creating space for downtime. Some ways we can do this would be having a mental health day for your family and just relaxing, doing this together. Something that I think parents forget is that if we are not allowing time in our lives to step back and relax, our kids are seeing that. So they're not seeing the value in relaxing. So we have to remember that we're the example there. So if they see us take that time and step away from something, they're learning that it's okay to do that. I mentioned all of our sports. Sometimes it's necessary to say, you know, we're not going to go to practice tonight. We need a break. We need to step away. I think we calculated it earlier. My kids play around 16 sports. So
wow.
It is so important to recognize that sports are not the most important thing in the world. We have to take care of ourselves. And that means stepping away sometimes. So just remembering that if your plate is too full, take some things off of it. That can be temporary. You can always put them back on.
That's good.
That is so good. And Brianna, I was reminded of some advice I was given a few years ago when I was kind of hitting a place in my own life where I felt overwhelmed. There were so many things mm-hmm. on my plate, lots of plates spinning. And someone told me, every week you need to look at your schedule and you need to say no to something. You need to take something out of that schedule. And that has stuck with me for a very long time, that I find myself at the beginning of each week looking at the schedule and looking at our family schedule and saying, okay, what can go? So that it creates a little bit more margin because we want to be faithful to the things God has called us to, for how he's gifted us. You know, sports are so much fun, and there's so many great life lessons to be learned in them and a part of them and different activities that we're a part of, whatever that looks like for your family. But it's okay to say no, you know, and step away when needed. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes saying no, we're saying no to good things. It's easy to say no to things that we don't like or that are not good. But when there are so many good things going on in our life, sometimes we have to just, again, picking something. Sometimes it's a good thing that we're saying no to, but just remembering we're saying yes to other things that are even more important for us. So I had a couple other just observations of things that can be helpful for promoting mental health in our homes. I had heard an analogy once where our emotions are like a tunnel that we need to pass through and get to the other side. And if you ever, you know, if you think of a baby crying, they're upset about something, like they really cry and then they get over it and they move on. And I think oftentimes as adults, we have emotions and we just try to just stuff them down. I can't feel that right now. We don't let ourselves feel our feelings. And I think as parents, we don't always want our children to feel their feelings because it's hard to see them upset or sad. If they come home and they had just a really bad day, we try to maybe hurry up and reassure them and make them feel better about things, when really sometimes just allowing our children to feel their feelings can be very helpful. They learn then how to work through things. They learn that it's okay to have those feelings, and they learn how to get to the other side of it. And I think that that is okay. That's a really good growth mindset. So yeah, I guess don't always be quick to just rush in, like let them have that, but then also validate what they're feeling. There's something called mirroring in the field of mental health, where we will do this as therapists, where we mirror back the feelings that our clients are having to help them become more emotionally aware. And when we do this as parents for our children, when they're upset and we say, yeah, I can see like you were really mad when that happened. Like you look like you're really mad, or wow, that seemed like that really hurt your feelings. We're just helping them identify their emotional experience and become more really emotionally intelligent, which promotes mental health even long-term for them.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's helpful. So I'd like to give you all a scenario. I didn't prepare you for this.
It's good. It's fine.
Okay, here we go. So I have an 8-year-old son, and he's just come home from school. Maybe he rides the bus, and there's a child that keeps picking on him on the bus. Mm-hmm. And he's learned the language of bullying. He knows that. And he comes home and he's quite upset. And as a result of a conversation that you have with him, you find out that he's been bullied. Mm. How do you respond to that as a parent?
I think the first thing I'd want to do is just continue conversation in that. So I also want to hear how my child wants me to respond to that. I think that's important. That doesn't mean that I necessarily have to follow that, right? So maybe it's not best to do exactly what they're telling me to do, but I want to hear what they're expecting from me. And then I also want to be honest with them about what action I am going to take. So I really want them to be a part of that decision and what the next steps are.
Yes, I think as a parent, you know, hearing the word bullying and just knowing how it can impact our children, or even maybe how it has impacted some of us, we may want to just rush in and immediately provide solutions. But like Brianna said, listening to our children, just gathering more information can help. I would want to just know things like, is this something that has been going on long term? What's your relationship been like with this child previously? I have found that the school can often be a great partner for working through that. You know, schools will sometimes say they have a no tolerance policy against bullying. Sometimes that may be true. Sometimes they may not be as supportive as like the statement might say. But I have engaged the principal or the school in conversations about that, not coming in accusatory, but just like, hey, can we have a conversation about this and talk through good solutions? And I guess I have personally found that to be helpful. But again, like giving our children a chance to talk through what they're experiencing and how they feel about it, and even understanding maybe where some of that might be coming from, so they understand the why, and not that it's okay, but have an explanation for what's happening can be helpful. So one thing that I will sometimes tell my children is like, how many happy people do you know who are mean? and so, you know, sort of like, you know, it's generalization, but oftentimes people are unkind when they're unhappy. And so just maybe not that we need to have compassion for the other person in that particular situation. You know, we don't want our child to feel sorry for the bully per se, but can give them a little bit more perspective on it.
That's good.
That is really good. I really appreciate how both of you focused on giving the child time to really talk through what had happened and to be able to help them feel seen and heard and listened to, and gathering that information, because I think many times as parents, as caregivers, as people who love the kids in our lives, we can just jump to those protective measures, right? Especially when we care so much. And so we can jump to our own conclusions and go there. And it's important to listen to their story and to enter into that story with them. So appreciate that. That's really good.
So as we start to wrap this up, is there anything else that you ladies would like to share with us?
You know what? I do think it's helpful to hit on social media. I think that that's a big one, a big thing that comes into the limelight when we talk about mental health and taking care of that. And I think it's important to remember that social media is a part of our lives now. With technology the way that it is and just the way things have changed, it's a part of our children's lives as well. So while we want to be mindful of what's happening with social media, it can also be helpful for them to have access to a platform like that if that's how they're engaging with their friends. So we want to make sure that we're doing this in a way that's safe for them, monitoring the interactions, limiting their time on it, and having conversation about how to do so in a safe way.
Yeah, that's good. That probably deserves a whole podcast on its own. That's such an important subject. So as you're listening to us, you may be thinking, what does all of this have to do with faith? I mean, this faith together stuff. So let me just say that when we are thinking well about faith, we have to think holistically. That means mind, soul, body, spirit. God's concerned about all of those. And so we want to make sure that as part of passing on faith to our kids, that we understand that our mental health, as well as other parts of our lives, are as important. As our faith can never be all that it needs to be without being healthy mentally. So thank you, ladies, for joining us and sharing with us today. So thank you for joining us and listening to this conversation. We appreciate you being a part of our family and all that we're doing as we try to live out faith together. So may the Lord bless you, keep you, and give you peace. You've been listening to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. Sign up for additional resources at centerff.com. When building faith, we are better together.